A warning, this podcast uses the sound of gunshots, live reports, firsthand accounts, and other sounds related to active shootings. If you need crisis counseling related to shootings, the National Disaster Distress Hotline is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can call 1-800-985-5990 or text 66746. If you know someone who may be a danger to the community or may be considering an act of violence yourself, please seek help. You can call your local authorities immediately. Many times you can be anonymous. Sandy Hook Promise also has a tip system called Say Something Tips. Just go to sandyhookpromise.org. As long as there have been mass shootings in the U.S., the political arguments have fallen into two buckets, mental health and guns. If you ask Americans why mass shootings occur, they'll either blame crazy people with mental health issues or too many guns and not enough laws. So what if we isolated these problems and looked globally at whether cultures and regionalism impact the number of mass shootings or mass attacks? Welcome to Seoul, South Korea. This fall, I took part in a two-week-long journalism exchange. Guns are illegal here. In fact, the police officers walking up and down the streets don't even have them. Law enforcement service weapons are locked and stored at police stations. Keep in mind, this is a country technically still at war with North Korea. Males 18 to 35 must serve more than a year of military service. While you don't feel the threat of North Korea in day-to-day life here on the streets of Seoul, everyone here is aware of the unfriendly and potentially nuclear neighbors to the north. As decades have rolled by, fewer and fewer South Koreans are seeking reunification. In fact, in 2025, 51% believed reunification with the north isn't necessary. Now, the Korean Peninsula is cut in half at the 38th parallel, with South Korea jutting out into the sea. Because of the north, South Korea functions kind of like an island. Every port, every runway is a checkpoint. In a place where you can't simply drive across a border, illegal weapons don't just show up. Foreign drugs are rare. There's little to no criminal influence from outside countries, perhaps a little unease about the Chinese immigrant community. Despite South Korea's long history of war and centuries of invasions, in modern times, it's built a booming economy from the ground up, seeing international success in exporting technology, automobiles, gaming, and of course, K-culture. Food, movies, TV, music, and sports. But the Confucian culture is still deeply ingrained into the population. There's honor in maintaining dignity, not revealing suffering, suppressing distress. And while the economy and K-culture grew rapidly, mental health treatment seemingly lagged behind. There's a lot of pressure to get in good schools, get good jobs, and succeed financially here. The suicide rate among all ages is among the highest in the world. In 2024, South Korea had 30 suicide deaths for every 100,000 people. That's twice the suicide rate of the United States. If mental health is the primary driver of mass violence, then South Korea, with a double suicide rate of the U.S., should be a war zone. But it isn't. Why is that?
Hello, my name is Song Jun Cho, and I'm a psychiatrist, and I'm working at Gangbuk Samsung Hospital. This Samsung is that Samsung. I'm also working at Sungkyunkwan University School of Medicine. I'm an associate professor, and my interest is general psychiatry, the schizophrenia, mood disorder, and workplace mental health. Really, thank you about getting interest in this theme of Korea. So it's really serious, and we are working very hard, but score is not good.
Tell me a little bit about your research and specifically what you do in your field.
I'm also working at the Workplace Mental Health Institute. So we have made some tools evaluate mental health of workers in Korea. So if some company asks us to evaluate workers' mental health, then we go out and we use our tools to evaluate their mental health. Then we give them the reports, individual report. It's a secret. It's individualized. That there's a, of course, there we do the, it's a confidentially, but the company may know about their average score of their mental health. Then we give them the feedback, what to do, how to regulate or make change in their companies. And so we do many researches about workers, but almost everybody works. Most of people work. So we see the correlation between the physical health and mental health. Physical activity is associated with mental health or societality, or the muscle, the amount of muscle, musculoskeletal muscle is associated with mental health or societality, or the how the workers' mental health works. It's like mediated by the GRIT. GRIT, yeah, and resilience. We also think about it. So we do every research about workers' mental health in my field.
Is it more a focus on individual people, or is it kind of trends in a workplace?
Like we do both. We do both.
So if you have one person who may be acting out, or if you have a department that might be really, really working hard and really kind of maxed out to their peak, that's what you're looking for.
Yep. So we evaluate both of them. So we give the reports individually and what to do in the company, the two tracks. 그리고 이거는 제가
So I also goes to for the CEOs or the management if they need me to coach them, so I give a consultancy about it as well. And for the environmental improvement and the overall atmosphere improvement and culture improvement, I also do the consultation for that as well.
Interesting. I don't know that we do a lot of that. I'm sure many of the bigger companies here in the United States might do that, but are you in high demand? Is that kind of research in high demand at the businesses there in South Korea?
So there is not a lot of demand at this moment, but there will be, because it is not really easy to find. It is not really uncommon for psychiatrists and themselves to be directly involved. That is also expected to grow. At our workplace mental health institute, we have more than 30 psychiatrists, along with statisticians and clinical psychologists. These professionals work together as a team, providing direct clinical services and implementing programs within workplaces. In fact, it is a single institution that is larger than any institutions in the world. At this moment, Samsung Electronics, they are investing a lot to us.
One of the reasons I reached out to you and I was looking for people in your field is because I have seen that South Korea has a very high rate of suicides, almost double that of the United States. I kind of wanted to explore that a little more, because one of the things that we're looking at in my podcast is mass shootings here in America. And what we found is a lot of them are people who want to die. They take this on and they decide that they're going to take other lives with them in their effort to die. So I don't want to get too morbid about this, but there are no guns in South Korea. There are very, very few, at least. So with this high rate, how is it that people are taking their lives in South Korea?
이제 시도 자체가 attempt 자체가 많은 거는 사실은
there is a lot of attempt, but you know, in terms of the guns, of course, America, they have guns. Some of the people saying because they have the guns, American people try to shoot other people, and Korea cannot do that. There is a saying, but in terms of attempts, there is a lot of drug intoxication. But if you think about the whole picture, the complete society, there is a lot of rates of hanging. And in terms of shooting, we do not have data, because it is not easy to have a hands-on to the guns in Korea.
그리고 또 이제 어템트 중에 많은 건 드럭 인톡시케이션이랑 같이 많은 게 이제 커팅이 많거든요. 그러니까 리스트 커팅이나.
So, in old times, there was a lot of attempts of, you know, there is a paracut, which was one of the pesticide. So, it was there a lot, but the government, Korean government, found that problem was serious, so they banned the selling of all the paracut. So, that's why we do not have a lot of that attempts now. So as a result, today hanging is a common, and falling is more common method of suicide in complete society.
Like people jumping out of windows or off balconies, things like that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who are these people? Are they young people? Are they older people? Is there a trend as far as where the suicides are taking place, or among which population, or is it across the board?
이게 어떤 관점에서 보느냐에 따라서 사실 굉장히
다르거든요. Okay. So it is really different how you see and what kind of perspective that you take on this analysis. And of course, it is different from which method of analysis you're using it. But actually, when it comes to suicide, it's true that many people are experiencing a significant psychiatric suffering. Individuals with conditions such as schizophrenia or bipolar disorder and depression, including those with mood disorders, face a particularly high risk. In fact, there is a study about within 1 month after discharge from the psychiatric treatment, that the risk of suicide can be more than 60 times higher than that of the general population. In general, one of the strongest predictor this history of previous suicide attempts for the younger generations. About income relativity for the suicide, there is not the data solely for the income is a little bit weak for the explanation. But however, there is a study comparing the United States, Japan, and South Korea, in that case, income appears to higher relative for the Korean population.
그리고 또 이런 보고도 있어요. 그러니까 조금 옛날 데이터.
So there is a report also. It is a bit old data. It is actually a longitudinal study from 2008, within 10 years. If you look into it, regional data for the age group of more than 60 years old, the basic pension receivers, which is very low income people, and their rates is higher, and if the region has a more rate in empty spaces or more individual, you know, housings, vacant houses of the whole total housing, more than and more single family homes and larger number of elderly people living alone, those kind of data in the region is relative to the suicide rate as well.
I mean, you work in workplace. I mean, is it economic hardships? Is it overworking? Is it maybe a combination of everything? But it sounds like, you know, people in more rural settings are at a higher risk.
So there is a data, there is an institution in Korea, Korea Foundation for Suicide Prevention, per se. They have this report to analyze the cause of suicide. According to the police data examining suicide cases by cause, about 35% are related to the psychiatric factors, around 25% to economic factors, and approximately 15% to physical illness. The remaining cases involve issues such as family problems, workplace difficulties, or very variant. So rather than simply income level, it's whether someone earns more money or less money, it is often the overall set of problem a person is experiencing. For example, this may include gambling debt or losses related to, you know, cryptocurrencies and stuff. So if you put it all together as an economic problem, it is very lonesome. But if you go into the individual cases and if you listen to their personal stories, it has very diverse problems within their lives.
You deal specifically with workplace situations and businesses. I've covered two mass shootings, one here in the Chicago area, one in Milwaukee, of someone who felt like they were getting bullied at work, felt like they were getting passed over for promotions. They got fired. They went to their car. They came back with a gun and shot people. It doesn't sound like a scenario that, you know, would necessarily transpire in South Korea, but when you're looking at workplace psychiatry, is that something you're looking at, someone who maybe wants to seek retribution at these workplaces?
In 100% of the suicide rate, then about 3.3% is about the workplace-related issues. But it is not really common you point that anger to other people in Korea. And especially that I can, it is a little bit different in Korea. And then when I listen to you, we have this different situation going on because Korea has implemented a law to prevent workplace harassment. And as a result, people may seek clinical treatment or file reports about workplace harassment. And then that rate has gone up. So that's a little bit different. That's how they express it at this moment. That's a little bit different from United States, I guess.
I think culturally, that's what I was trying to get at with this interview, is there is a difference between people here in the United States and the way they deal with this stress and anger. Mass shootings in America, in many cases, seem like statement deaths. They're trying to make a point about what's going on in their life or trying to say, this is what the community has done to me. This is what my work has done to me. This is what my school has done to me. And so they lash out. And it seems as though there are kind of barriers in place to prevent it from getting to that point in South Korea. Am I correct? I mean, do you feel like you're able to catch these situations far enough in advance, and that doesn't create the culture that maybe we have in the United States?
So for me, this issue was the biggest issue that troubled me for several days. I kept thinking about, even over the weekend, asking myself what would be the difference that came into this result. So as I think of, in Korea, there is a cultural emotion known as han, which usually translated into English grudge. It's a little bit different from the grudge or just a simple anger or the sadness. It's very emotional combination of anger and resentment and loss and frustration. Those kind of suppressed pains are all into this word. And it reflects cultural tendency to endure sufferings internally. And in Korea, we also, under the Confucian cultural tradition for hundreds of years, and in Confucian culture, maintaining one's dignity and not expressing hardship outwardly has traditionally been regarded as a virtue. So fundamentally, a person who endures and tolerates and preserves is often seen as a more admired person. So recently, Korean younger generations in Korea, they try to express their emotions more often, but we've been under this culture more than 100 years, so it is not really easily accepted in the society, I guess.
One of the things that we think here is that's going on in the United States is one mass shooting and another mass shooting. They're not necessarily connected to each other. The people don't know each other. The motives aren't the same. But when we see someone shoot up a public space or a movie theater, it gives someone an idea that they could do that in their community, whether in their school or whatever. Do you feel like suicides in Korea are that way as well? Because I know there have been some high-profile K-pop stars who have died by suicide. Does that cause concern that younger people will see that and other people will see that and then want to do harm to themselves?
이게 데이터가 있어요. 그러니까 한
So we actually have this data, you know, all the after like 3 to 4 weeks of famous people's committed suicide, there is a higher rates of suicide. We call that a Werther effect. When it there is a big impact impacted, you know, suicide which is actress Choi Jin-sil, which was really huge star in Korea back in the days. When she committed suicide, I was a first year resident, and the impact was enormous. She was someone many people in Korea viewed almost like an angel figure. So, and very deeply loved. So after her suicide, the method of her suicide was hanging, one night, 7 people came to the hospital with the same method of attempt. And similar thing happened also after that with several cases of famous people. So you told us about massive shooting, and massive shooting can inspire other people to shoot. And this similar thing also happens in the suicide as well. When we later asked, psychiatric patients, when their mental health problems begun, many of them refer to that incident. So those kind of thing affects to the people a lot. And one of the things Korean psychiatrists have done in response is to develop media reporting guidelines. Of course, we cannot say do this, do that to the medias, but at least we can give certain guidelines for good, so that in their reports there can be some of the guidelines that they can follow that minimize the effect.
South Korea is facing a rising crisis of what they call lonely deaths, with about 4,000 people dying alone in 2024, a 7% increase from the year before. These deaths often involving isolated middle-aged men due to suicide or illness highlight profound social isolation, economic hardship, and rapid societal aging, prompting government action and increased awareness. In America, we're trained to run and hide from a shooter. In South Korea, the danger isn't the stranger in the hallway. It's the silence of one's own apartment. A minute of global suicide stats. According to the International Association of Suicide Prevention, an estimated 703,000 people die by suicide worldwide each year. In 2019, 1.3% of all deaths were the result of suicide. The global suicide rate is over twice as high among men than women. Over half of all deaths by suicide occur before the age of 50. Globally, suicide is the fourth leading cause of death in 15 to 29-year-olds. A previous suicide attempt is the strongest risk factor for death by suicide. Suicide is illegal in over 20 countries and can be punishable by fines, even imprisonment. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, in the U.S., just under 50,000 people died by suicide in 2023. That's one American every 11 minutes. It's estimated 12.8 million Americans have considered suicide, 3.7 million have planned a suicide, 1.5 million have attempted it. Miles away from South Korea in Cologne, Germany.
Tatsächlich, wir drei heute zusammen in einer Sendung.
Television channel RTL hosts an annual Spendenmarathon, excuse my German there. In the U.S., we would call it a 24-hour telethon, raising money from viewers for a major charity or cause. In most cases, the money's raised for children's causes. But in 2024, a large portion of the proceeds of this marathon was donated to combat loneliness in the country. In 2024, it was estimated 60% of Germans experienced a form of loneliness, with most being between the ages of 18 and 39, many young adults struggling to transition into the workforce and enter relationships. It's such a concern that the German government has created a strategy to combat loneliness, a 33-page downloadable plan to help develop greater social connections. But the suicide rate in Germany is about 12 for every 100,000 people. That's well below South Korea and even below the United States. In Germany, guns are legal, but highly restricted to hunting, not protection. Germany has had mass shootings before, including in recent years, but they're rare. It's also had mass casualty events, including vehicle rammings, and has seen an increase in the number of stabbings in recent years. Yet mass shootings by students at schools, disgruntled employees, or citizens going through a mental health crisis aren't a real concern there. The bigger threat is foreign terror attacks. The U.S. State Department has put Germany's travel threat at 2, suggesting Americans traveling to Germany exercise caution. Now, that's not the levels of other countries like Russia, Libya, or even Mexico. It falls in line with other European nations like the UK and France, mostly over concerns of attacks by radical Islamic groups. Dr. Thomas Hesterman is a professor of journalism at Macromedia University in Hamburg, with a focus on crime and how it's covered in Germany.
Can you talk a little bit about the gun culture in Germany? Who can own guns? Are they legal? Why do people own guns?
Yeah, well, Germany is very restrictive on firearms. We have a completely different relationship in Germany than Americans do. Well, in Germany, access to firearms is limited to people who do it, who maybe are hunting for animals or who do it like sports. So I've looked up the numbers. It's less than a 1,947,000. And this includes hunters, sport shooters, collectors, and others. So in other words, roughly 1 in 80 Germans owns at least one live firearm. But when I was in the United States, I often heard statements such as, if somebody comes to my property, I reach for my gun. And in Germany, by contrast, people would say, then I call the police. So in Germany, self-justice is considered taboo. So we have a very high trust in the police, in the security, and we do not have the feelings like maybe this pioneer spirit, which is like more U.S. American mentality to do it yourself. When we see how many mass shootings we had in Germany, it's very, very few incidents. So 2 years ago, there was a former member of the Jehovah's Witnesses, and he shot 7 people in Hamburg 2 years ago. And this is, I think, the last kind of mass shooting I can remember. And it's 2 years ago in a people of 80 million inhabitants. So it's a very, very rare incident. And maybe the same is the role of the police, that, well, I assume when a police officer, maybe in Chicago, has to stop somebody, he is aware that this person might wear a gun or maybe even probably wears a gun. Whereas in Germany, of course, police officers are aware of risk, but they do not have to calculate that the majority or a large number of people do wear guns. So they have to be cautious, but they themselves are more, maybe more defensive. So they do not approach a car with a gun in their hand, because they normally do not calculate that the person they stop is wearing a gun.
There is a history of violence in Germany, obviously, between the war, before reunification. There was never a demand among the public to protect themselves from the government coming and seizing their properties. There was never a desire for more protections from the individual there.
When you have been to Berlin, the German capital, there is a church we call the Gedächtniskirche. It's in the pretty close to the center, to the middle of the city, which has never been built up completely. I mean, it is a church. It has a roof. You can there are masses there, but it wears the signs of war. You can see, well, this is how the nation was wounded. How there still is. The trace of destruction being seen, and this, and the square close to this church, the Breitscheidplatz, is also a central place. And there, an Islamist terrorist almost 10 years ago drove a truck into a Christmas market, killed 13 people, more than 60 were seriously injured, and. So maybe this is kind of typical of what you just said. There are seen the traces of the large destruction. I mean, Berlin was burned down, was destructed so deeply, and decades later, there are some people killed, but this is a very, very rare incident. So normally the life in Germany is very safe. So 80 million people, we have about 2,800 persons killed in car accidents year by year. So what is dangerous for people is that people drive drunk, that they are inattentive, excessive speed, but it's not from terrorist attack. And still... terrorist attacks are particularly puzzling and therefore deeply unsettling to people. So it's not really the number, but it's maybe the miracle, the unbelievable incident which it is. So and this also is like the media coverage, which is of course very, very high when there is a terrorist attack, and is very, very little when there is just a, I would say, just a normal car accident.
You brought up the shooting in Hamburg in 2023. There were shootings at Heidelberg University. In 2020, there were 11 immigrants shot in one incident. In 2016, Munich school shooting there. So they do happen in Germany. They do exist. I think here in the United States, we're hyper aware of shootings, maybe because of the way that we've covered it in the media. But I mean, it's led to billions of dollars in security at schools and in public places. It's led to trainings at schools to protect against school shootings with children in some cases. Have they begun that process? Is that something that's done in Germany a lot to protect against school shootings or just maybe public shootings?
No, there's not so much training. I think the most efficient means to get strong against violence with firearms is to not have them and to not spread them. And because there is such a long tradition of very restrictive use of firearms, there are not so many around. So the risk is comparatively very, very low. So maybe it would be very different when there are many firearms around, then you would try to get them back. But maybe that after the end of the war, which is now 80 years ago, that maybe there were more firearms spread around by former soldiers. But now there really are comparatively few weapons. So the risk of mass shootings is really low. And yeah, you mentioned some incidents. Of course, the sad truth is that it only needs like one or two insane people to bring so much sadness over people, as we just have seen in Bondi Beach in Australia. So yeah. Sometimes everybody who's children, and you were saying, yeah, you are looking forward to spend time with your family. It is so much work to have people growing up and to make them learn and develop. It's years and years and years over accompanying people with energy and with love, and it only takes a few minutes of hate and of violence to destroy all that. This is one of the truths of man. mankind that it takes so little to do so much damage. So what we see in Germany is when we reflect, like the last Christmas, how the Christmas markets changed. So in Germany, I don't know if it's the same in the United States, but we have a long tradition of Christmas markets and turnarounds, and you can eat nice things and just enjoy the times and get in Christmas mood. And there were lots of barriers building around them, so they were protected, and there has been more police attention, more controls. But still, I've seen several Christmas markets in different cities in Germany, and they were still very joyful and very crowded. So I think there is a new concern, a sense of concern accompanies this joy, but still people come together. And I think maybe this is the strongest reaction, that there are some insane people which nobody really understands. There are some Islamist terrorists who are against peaceful coming together. And the good reaction is to be protected, to be aware, but still celebrate together, come together, enjoy time together. And this is what happened in many, many German cities and villages.
We talked about the shootings. We talked about the vehicle rammings. Are most of these terror or ideologically driven and motivated, these attacks? Or are these domestic? Are these people with mental health issues? Are these workplace shootings?
It's there are so few that it's hard to really make a statistic. But when we see like the cases of a driver ramming a car into a crowd, there was the most prominent incident was in Magdeburg 1 year ago. I think you just mentioned it. Yeah, and this six people were killed. I think this was the most. The incident with the highest attention. And so the German Chancellor, Friedrich Merz, he was just there a few days ago in Magdeburg to support those people mourning there and remembering what has happened. The Christmas market closed down for 1 day to make a stop and to think back. This was kind of insane person. Then we had Mannheim, Munich, so further attacks, and so half were. Two of them were Islamist, two of them were mental disorders. I think maybe what's also important that of these four attacks, three were committed by immigrants. So this fueled the debate on immigration in Germany. They have been, the police succeeded in preventing some attacks at a very early stage of planning. These were also immigrants. So, there has at least been some debate. And this is what we also see. So this is my research topic. How does public think about it? How do media report? And this is what is very obvious, that from the statistics of violent crimes, we know that two-thirds are committed by Germans, and one-third is committed by people without a German pass who are just living as immigrants in Germany. But in the media, when reports mention the origin of perpetrators, it's about 90% of foreigners. So the majority of the criminals really are Germans, but in the media, we have the impression that hardly everybody who is committing a crime, a violent crime, is a foreigner. So there's a very, very strong distortion. So maybe it even strengthens the fear of the strangers. And when we did some research about how is it in other countries, it was so obvious that, for instance, in Japan, the media say it is the Chinese. In Russia, they say, oh, it's some of the minorities. In European countries, so we have more the the focus on other countries. We do not think so much in terms of race as it, maybe in the United States or in Canada is typical, but it's the main pattern is it is the other. So we are okay. The bad things come from outside, and this pattern is worldwide. It doesn't matter who it is and who it is against, but it is the other.
One of my German colleagues had referenced the number of stabbings that they've seen that have gone up, mm-hmm. or at least the impression that stabbings have gone up. One of the things I wanted to explore is maybe this evil exists everywhere and it's just finding different ways to get out. Maybe it's mass shootings in America. Maybe it's bombings in the Middle East. Maybe it's vehicle rammings in Europe. What is kind of the source of these stabbings in Germany, and are the numbers going up? Are they as bad as that this colleague tells me?
Well, first of all, we have to see what Germany is still a very, very secure country. Maybe for some people, they do not have the impression, but the risk of being killed again in the United States is six times as higher as in Germany. And but some circumstances do change. Like, yes, we have more stabbings in the last years than before. And we know from surveys when, for instance, young people are asked, do you wear a knife when you go outside, when you're not at school, when you go on parties and so on, and meet on the streets, and do you wear a knife? And yes, this number is going up. So there's a very big challenge to schools, to families, to the police, to tell young people this is a high risk. If you feel stronger when you wear a knife and so you can protect yourself, it might turn against yourself. So you do not minimize the risk, but you maximize the risk of really getting into big trouble.
And what is the German impression of crime and violence in the United States? I'm just interested to kind of see what opinions have formed about the United States and crime and guns.
Yeah, well, indeed. Many Germans assume that life in America is much more dangerous than in Germany, which is really also proven by statistics. It really is more dangerous, and I would say like in Germany, compared to United States, we do not have that many no-go areas. So even like maybe you wouldn't walk in dark parks in the night, but on most streets, you would just walk even at maybe 11 in the night. So there are so that's strict no-go areas. So I would assume that many Germans, would really think that life in the United States is dangerous. You might be shut down. And also, the perspective on the police that I would say that the German police is very strict by the rules, is very well educated, is very restrictive in using firearms, for instance, or using violence. It's more like arguing and telling people what to do and what not to do, whereas we have some movies and some news from the United States, showing police officers maybe shooting 100 times into a car without asking, and this to me is sometimes very impressive, that German police officers have an attitude to even if they come to perpetrators with weapons, that they succeed in arresting them without even hurting them. So I think this is a very a very good proof of competence and really trying to do it the least violent way it is possible.
It's a bit odd when I talk about mass shootings and violent crime with foreign journalists. They tell me it's not really a problem there. In the last weeks, we've seen a gun attack in Australia. We've seen a suicide bombing in Pakistan. We've seen vehicle rammings and terror attacks across the globe. This evil exists across the planet. But when the foreign journalists say it's not a problem here, they're not being naive. They're describing a reality where they don't view a stranger with a gun as a primary danger. And the depth of the culture that's been instilled doesn't provide a trigger. Special thanks to doctors and professors Sung Jun Cho and Thomas Hesterman, also to our Korean interpreter, Young Hee Kim. We'll dive deeper into international mass casualty events in our next episode.